Joining us on the program now is retired Navy Admiral James Stavridis, former military commander of NATO and a Bloomberg Opinion columnist. Admiral, thanks very much for joining us. And it's nice, I think we can start on an optimistic note here. This piece that you've written for Bloomberg, China thinks 50 years ahead, can the U.S.? It seems like you have an idea that things are about to change and that you're optimistic, particularly because of the creation of this new House Select Committee on China, headed by Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin. Explain why you think this could mark a change in long-term thinking.
Well, China is one of the very few issues upon which there's real bipartisan agreement. I think the other one, by the way, is Ukraine, and perhaps we can talk about that in a moment. But this idea that I think both sides want to put a serious effort into creating a long-term U.S. strategy for dealing with China is quite signal. And in particular, it's led by a very impressive, relatively young 38-year-old congressman, Mike Gallagher, who is a Princeton undergraduate, a PhD from Georgetown, a combat veteran, a U.S. Marine in the forever wars in Iraq. Really an impressive individual. The key is going to be whether that committee can be sufficiently bipartisan. I think it can be, to really create a long-term look at how we ought to approach China.
Well, what are the elements of an effective long-term strategy towards China?
That's the key question, and I'll give you five. One is military. What are the military systems, from unmanned to space to special forces to artificial intelligence? Another one is diplomatic. How do we construct the best diplomatic approach, combining allies, partners, and friends from Japan to India to Singapore in the region? I'd say number three has got to be economic. How do we balance the trade and tariffs in a way that creates a level playing field between these two countries? I'd say number four is cultural, informational. How do we talk about ourselves, our diplomacy? How do we counter the authoritarian moves out of China? And then fifth and finally, maybe most important, is technology. Mm-hmm. How do we construct how we deal with chips, how we ensure that we win the race toward artificial intelligence? I think all of those need to be blended together in this strategy.
Admiral, is it inherently more difficult for democracies to plan out over, say, 50 years, in that leadership changes sometimes every 4 years?
It does, and you put your finger on a significant challenge for the United States and for other democracies. Exactly as you say, democracy changes and the direction can shift pretty dramatically. Whereas in an authoritarian country, someone like President Xi, he's 70, he'll probably be around at least another 10, 15, maybe 20 years. He can keep his hand on the tiller. On the other hand, the vibrancy of a democracy that brings new ideas forward, that allows us to reinvent ourselves, is also an advantage. Bottom line, I'd rather have the hand of cards as a democracy. Winston Churchill said, democracy, it's the worst form of government, except for all the others. I'll go with that.
Yeah, indeed. If we want to unpack some of those five pillars individually, let's take militarily, for example, what would be needed as part of a long-term plan. But there's risks attached as well in terms of potentially starting an arms race.
There is, but let me tell you, China is already embarked on that. They are building ships, warships, much faster than we are. The Chinese Navy has 350 significant warships. We have 300. China is expanding its nuclear strategic forces. China is expanding into space. We still have a lead, by the way, in many of these areas, but that race is already in progress. The reality is we've got to move forward, and I would put three things at the top of my list: unmanned vehicles, to include space, by the way, but also drones, as we see in Ukraine. Number two, I think artificial intelligence, cyber security. And number three, this one may surprise you, special forces. elite teams, SEALs, Green Berets, but also elite cyber warriors are going to be part of this. We need to keep moving forward on that military pillar.
Admiral, just today, Bloomberg reports an extensive outline of China building up several unoccupied land features in the South China Sea near the Spratly Islands. And in our story, we cite Western officials and have satellite photos that show that fishing fleets operating as Chinese maritime militias have been carrying out construction activities in four features of the Spratlys. Now, a listener who knew you were coming on the program texted me, hoping that I could ask you if the world has decided that the occupation of the Spratlys is okay.
No, we have not. And you're going to continue to see Western maritime powers, to include the United States, our allies like the British, the French have signed up to this, the Australians, the Japanese. We're going to drive our destroyers right through those contested waters in the Spratlys. And by the way, it's not just this small group of islands. China claims the entire South China Sea as territorial waters. This is a land area, Brian and Paul, that is half the size of the continental United States. We're never going to let China simply claim that huge land area, and we're going to continue to contest these waters. This is not okay. And you will see the West push China very hard on the South China Sea.
Yeah, it's not just the South China Sea that's disputed as well. I mean, just today there's a report in the Times about India moving an unprecedented number of troops to the border with China and Arunachal Pradesh. What can the Quad do in situations like this?
Yeah, the Quad, for those who aren't in this on a minute-to-minute basis, is Japan, United States, Australia, and India. And those four nations, the Quad, are collectively combining their security, their diplomacy, not a formal alliance, but working together to create a counterweight to China. It's very important that the United States, Japan, and Australia, the other members of the Quad, provide support to India in this dispute, which is getting pretty serious in the Himalayas at the very top of the world.
Yeah. In your piece that we've been referring to in this chat, you gave a list of books that people should read to learn more about this. Maybe I would add one. It's called 2034, A Novel of the Next World War, written by you along with Elliot Ackerman. And the reason I started off the interview by saying, you know, I'm making a big deal of, let's start off on an optimistic note, is that it's a pretty dark theme that you have in that book.
It is. It's a novel set in the year 2034, hence the title 2034, A Novel of the Next World War. And of course, it's about a war with China. But here's the optimistic note. The book is intended not as predictive fiction, but rather as cautionary fiction. The idea of the book is to outline how a war could start, how the U.S. and China could stumble into a war. And by the way, it begins in the South China Sea with a scenario set in a Freedom of Navigation patrol very near the contested island features we talked about. But here's the point. If we construct a plan, if we deter China, if we work with allies, partners, and friends, we can, in fact, avoid stumbling into a war. That's why it's so important that we create a coherent plan ultimately to deter China. Bottom line, look, the relationship with China is difficult. We're going to have to bend it. We want to be careful we don't end up breaking it and ending up in a war with China.
I'm told by our bureau chief in Taipei that people aren't that worried about China invading Taiwan. In 20 seconds, should they be?
I have one word for you. Ukraine. People in Kyiv 10 months ago often said, we know the Russians really well. They're not actually going to invade. Yeah. How did that turn out?
Yeah, it's a cautionary tale. Admiral, thank you for joining us. A good chat. Retired Navy Admiral James Stavridis, former military commander of NATO and a Bloomberg Opinion columnist.